Yes, hello, this is Danhausen here, very nice for evil, and you are listening to Bob After Dark. Subscribe or be cursed.
From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is the ever wonderful, ever vampiric Panic's not here. Who are you?
The other guy.
Oh my gosh, Count Panic's not here. This is so strange.
No, he actually bribed me to come in here today, so... He said he wanted to have some cheese curds. I don't know what that was all about.
Folks, this was a last minute addition to Bob After Dark. Count Panic needed the night off due to some technical issues, and we didn't want to go 3 weeks without a show. So lo and behold, we have the one, the only Pat from Ghostly Podcast.
Good thing I'm the one and only, because I mean, if the world had more of me, my God, I don't know. I think we would take over, actually. I really do.
Take over what exactly?
Exactly. That is the question. I would take over the Joe Rogan podcast.
What would you call it?
I would call it not the Joe Rogan podcast. Just put not in front of it.
My goodness. Yeah. You know, so tell us a little bit about who you are and what Ghostly Podcast is. My fans should know who you are by now, and they should know what Ghostly is, but just in case, what's the deal?
So I am your friendly neighborhood skeptic. I do not believe in ghosts. I'm on the fence about cryptids. I mean, some maybe. Definitely not the praying mantis man with his with his overalls on. Because that's just, and anyone that wears clothes, I'm not into that. I don't believe that they can do that. And I am a believer in UFOs. Ghostly Podcast is a podcast where we debate ghost stories. So me being the skeptic, I am always giving the scientific facts that probably are not so scientific. In the latest episode, we talk about matrixing and priming. Those are two new things to add to the Pat dictionary now.
Oh, matrixing is a good one.
Yeah.
You should be. That's like probably your greatest tool in your arsenal now.
Now that I know the word for it, yeah, it will be. And priming too. You know, I believe that a lot of this stuff is priming. Priming would be, for those that don't know, would be that, like, me and Bob are going to talk about something today. So we are priming you to believe in it. And so when you go there to this location or whatever, you're more susceptible to see that because you believe now.
Absolutely. By the way, Heather in chat says, I'm new to the Ghostly Podcast and really enjoying it. So you got a new fan from the Bob After Dark fan base, Pat.
Thank you, Heather. I appreciate it.
I believe you two met at the Bob After Dark Sometimes Scaring is Caring event.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The audience.
Okay. Well, it's great to have you on board, Heather. I hope you don't get too mad at me.
And then Vic says hello with Kitty Spam, by the way.
Hey.
Yes, and then last but not least, I'm playing catch up on all the comments, and then we have Windstorm says hello to me, and hello, Pat, as well. So hello, hey, across Windstorm. The board, everybody. We're just getting along to saying hello to everybody. Bob After Dark is your weekly show where we talk about legends, lore, and supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and of course, Pat's favorite pickleball player of all time.
Yeah, I love me some pickle paddle. That's what I call it, pickle paddle.
I thought you were a big pickleball person, though.
No, I'm not, no.
You know why I'm getting confused? Count Panic's a big pickleball person.
Oh, okay.
What's your
favorite? Well, he's eating cheese curds.
What's your favorite pastime, Pat?
Ooh, favorite? I have ADHD, so everything is my favorite. I dabble in everything. So
wrestling.
I'd say pro wrestling is up there, but only WWE. I'm not familiar with AEW or any of the other ones. And yeah, I would say that that's pretty much up there right now. Also, CrossFit for some reason, even though I don't do CrossFit. I'm really into it, though. I'm into watching it. Watching people sweat a lot makes me happy for some reason.
That it's a good thing to be excited about, I may say so.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, yeah.
As the fans know, my outside of the paranormal, pro wrestling is just my one of my favorite things in the world. I've always wanted,
because you were a professional wrestler.
Yes, but I just love professional wrestling. It means so much to me. And I love pro wrestling. So one day I'd like to start a pro wrestling podcast. I always had this idea of doing a rebooking show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Someday when I'd have time, whatever that means.
So, pro wrestling, what would be a dream match for you that never actually happened?
Taker Sting.
Oh, okay. Taker versus Sting. I'm not really familiar with Sting that much. I know he's a legend, but yeah, definitely Taker I am from ECW and from WWE.
Get the two spooky guys together.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go. And and who do you think would win that match?
Taker's got to go over 100%.
Yeah, especially if it's like WrestleMania. Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, if it was at Mash at the Beach or something, or Halloween Havoc, I'd give it to Sting, but...
Sure.
But we're not a wrestling podcast. We're a paranormal podcast, Pat.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. We have to talk about that stuff.
Yes, and you didn't ask me. The usual back and forth is Cal Panic would then ask me what my favorite pastime is, and then I would probably tell you.
Eating broccoli?
Eating broccoli would be my favorite pastime. No, I'm a disc golfer. I haven't played in a long time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But what I was playing before I got sick was I was an avid player of disc golf, and I love it, and I believe in the sport, and I love to support it as much as I can.
So I was at a folk festival this summer, and where it was at was at a disc golf place, too. And I had never seen one of those. I had never seen one of those, and people were playing through as people are playing music and stuff. It was really odd.
Yeah, but the folk scene, disc golf, they go together. It doesn't surprise me.
So I didn't even realize that there was like, because I always wondered how you just start, you know, and you go up to the, like, where you would putt the ball if it was a golf course. So you just go up there and you throw it.
Yes, and you throw it at a basket with chains.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's
very interesting.
It's a great sport. Changed my life. When I get back into it in 2026, when I could get my body back ready for it, I'm going to be back out on that course, and it may help me lose 50 pounds before that's the goal again in 2026.
Now, maybe a listener would want to challenge you to a round or something. I don't know what it's called when you play.
Oh, it's a round of disc golf. I don't play competitively.
Yeah. But maybe a listener could. Maybe you can do like some contest.
Well, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Pat Windstorm wants to know what kind of cryptid you would want to be if you could be one. Which cryptid?
Well, the one that I'd want to be is already taking. It's Mothman, because I love the ability to be able to fly. But since Bob is Mothman, I cannot be that. Although Bob is not the Mothman, he is a Mothman, which is different. So let's see. I don't know. Maybe Loch Ness. I could see that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Big, you know, underwater a lot. I could see that. That would be a fun life. Except to not have a partner would be really sad, you know.
I would agree. Hey, Lacey says. Lacey says hi. I have Bob and Pat. Yes, sweet. Hello, hello. Nice.
Hey, Lacey.
Yes. Back to here. If I would say anything, Bob would be Mothman, I guess. And that's what everybody says. Yeah. Jay Breha says, hey, from Maquon, Illinois, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Maquon, Illinois.
Maquon? No, it's not Maquon. No, I don't think so.
Maquon? I don't know.
I've never heard of that, but that's cool.
But hello, thanks for joining in. We appreciate having you. All right, so let's get to the Bob After Dark bits. So we divide up the show into two parts. We have our weird spooky news of the week. That's where me, the Bob, go scouring the internet, and you, the Pat, get to listen to these stories and give us the hashtag Pat's take, where you give us your take on these news stories. I got three of them this week. And then we're going to dive into the meat and potatoes of the episode, the lore of the week, if you will. But we're going to start with the weird spooky news of the week first. Are you ready?
I'm born ready.
All right. So our first story comes from the UPI. They're on the news section. A robot breaks world record with 66-mile walk in China. Chinese tech firm AGBot earned a Guinness World Record when its humanoid robot A2 went for a 66-mile walk from, and pardon my enunciation here, folks, I don't speak the language, but Jiangsu, Jiangsu province to Shanghai. The robot set off from Jinji Lake and had arrived at Shanghai's Bund in a single continuous walk made by possible by a system devised to allow the robot to swap batteries while continuing to operate. The 24-hour trek earned AGBot the Guinness World Record title for the longest journey walked by a humanoid robot. The company said A2 followed all traffic laws during its long trek and walked across various surfaces, including asphalt, tiled pavement, and bridges. The robot interacted with reporters at the end of its walk, stating that it might now need a new pair of shoes. Hashtag Bob's take.
Yeah, I totally believe it. So,
I mean, you have to believe it. It's real. It happened.
Yeah. But I mean, I just heard a really interesting fact. If you think technology is speeding up so much, when the Wright brothers invented the plane, just 66 years later is when we landed on the moon, some would say. I don't know if you're a conspiracy theorist, but I believe that there was a moon landing. 66 years from the time that they made the plane to the time that they landed on the moon. So if they could do that in 66 years, we could definitely get an AI robot to be able to cross over any place. That's amazing. I know that also in China, they're working, well, they have actually, and you could buy them right now, exoskeletons. So you can put them on to run faster, to run effortlessly. So even Bob, I don't know if you're a runner. I'm definitely not a runner, but if you put one of these on, you could run. So yeah, they're coming up with some great technology. It's scary though, right?
Oh, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I don't know if you're a runner, Bob. No, I'm not,
Pat. No. I'm not going to judge you or anything like that. People run, all different types of people run. So I tried recently to become a runner and I am no good at it.
I would consider myself a brisk walker. I am a very good walker.
What kind of pace would you say you have in a mile?
Jeez, when I was moving well at disc golf, I was doing pretty well. These days, not so well, but my health also hasn't been the best over the past couple of years. So
yeah,
we're trying our best here. Next year is going to be my year.
Yeah, you lost an organ and stuff, right?
I lost two organs, pal.
Two organs. Wow. Yeah, well, I gained one. So
I know you did. That's pretty cool. Yeah. We walked away with you having more organs than me by the end of the year.
Actually, I'm not sure about that because I've had my gallbladder removed as well. So,
then we're even.
Maybe. I'm not. We would have to talk shop a lot more to figure that one out.
I understand. Either way, Pat walked away a very happy man because
he
gets to live a free life now, which is amazing.
I'm a free man.
Yes. All right. Let's move on. Next story comes to us from Sky News. Sky News tells us first treasures from the Holy Grail of shipwrecks has been recovered. The site wreck of the Colombian state secret and ownership of the treasure is hotly contested. An 18th century Spanish galleon dubbed the Holy Grail of shipwrecks for its storied cache of 11 million gold and silver and coins, estimated at 20 billion or 20 BN or 16 BN euros, which I'm assuming means billion. So $20 billion or 16 billion euros has yielded its first treasures. The San Jose 64-gun galleon of the Spanish Navy was sunk by the British in 1708 when her powder magazines exploded near Cartagena, Colombia. Now a Colombian mission to salvage the wreck has retrieved its first artifacts, a cannon, three coins, and some porcelain. The recovery forms part of the expedition to the wreck approved by the Bogota last year following the rediscovery of the ship in 2015. The San Jose lies 600 meters or 2,000 feet below the Caribbean Sea, but its exact location is a state secret and the ownership of the treasure is hotly contested. It has been the subject of a legal battle in the United States, Colombia, and Spain over who owns the rights to the sunken treasure. Sea Search Armada, a group of American investors, claim to have discovered the ship in 1982 and demands $10 billion for its part, estimating that it's about 50% of its treasure's worth. The Colombia government, meanwhile, says the purpose of its deep-sea mission is research, is not treasure, and that the artifacts will be preserved and studied.
I think when you say $10 billion next time, you have to do that, right?
What do you mean?
$10 billion.
$10 billion.
You have to put your finger up against your
billion.
It's the other way. You never watched Austin Powers?
I'm familiar with the third one vaguely.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, yeah, you're okay. The coin's known as MACUQUINAS. Have been taken to the National Museum of Colombia, while the other finds have been studied and preserved at the Caribbean Oceanographic and Hydrographic Research Center. The Colombian Institute of Anthropology and History are said subjecting the artifacts to a laboratory analysis could shed new light on the ship's history. In a statement, it said, each of archaeological objects collected from the shipwreck opens new possibilities of discovering more aspects of the history of the San Jose galleon. The direct study of those coins, the porcelain cups and the cannon, and the sediment remains associated with these objects will allow us to delve deeper into the aspects of this investigation. Areas of study include the composition of the artifacts, the origin of their manufacture, chronology, and production technologies of the time. The Colombian government is also investigating the cause of the ship's sinking and has suggested it could have sunk for reasons other than explosion, including damage to the hull. The research says that the project comprises of a number of phases, including the first of which is a non-intrusive study of the wreck's archaeological context and debris field. The newly recovered items were brought up as part of the second phase, collecting artifacts and adapting them for preservation in a non-marine environment. Hashtag Patsteak.
Yeah, so let me start by asking you, how do you feel about disturbing the dead?
Well, that's a good question. Where does archaeology begin and grave robbing end, or vice versa?
Just because we can, does that mean we should? You know, it's like,
well, they're not selling bodies down there. They're just finding these coins.
Well, if there's a shipwreck, there's probably bodies involved. Otherwise, they would have known about this location for a long time and they would have gotten this stuff earlier. So I'm assuming that it took this long to find the vessel itself. But yeah, it's like, can't we just let things just be? Like, they constantly are going at the Titanic and trying to, you know, lodge stuff away from there and stuff, because the Titanic isn't going to last forever. It just, should we? That is my question about it. Even though I don't believe in ghosts, I do believe in respecting the dead. So let sleeping dogs lie, you know? I don't know. Yeah. That's kind of my take. Yeah.
I don't want to sound like Indiana Jones, but it belongs in a museum.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you think that don't even disturb the ship at all, huh?
I mean,
all the treasure down there.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, maybe. I don't know. It's just a question that I have. Should we do this though? It's like, It's like Goonies. You've seen Goonies, right?
Yes, of course I've seen Goonies.
Yeah. So it's like taking the money from the, what was the pirate's name? One-Eyed Willie?
Yeah.
Taking the gold from One-Eyed Willie. You know, you can't do it. You have to leave some for him.
Yes. And they ended up with a little pouch at the end to save the day. Spoilers on a 40-year-old movie.
Well, they are going to be making a sequel, by the way.
Do they have the original cast coming back?
From what I hear, Corey Feldman will be there, yes.
I didn't ask about just Corey Feldman.
Yes, I believe that they do have most of them, and if not all of them.
Because listen, Sean Astin grew up to be a fine actor, and I would love to see him back in just doing this childlike wonderment role.
Yeah, I wonder if it's going to be like a reboot or if it's actually going to be a sequel. That's what I'm wondering. So we'll have to wait and see. But they brought back Karate Kid with Cobra Kai, so might as well bring back Goonies. They're just going to bring back all the movies of my youth.
I mean, you got Ghostbusters. You got three new Ghostbusters films in the past.
I do, yeah.
And then you got a new Indiana Jones film, new Jurassic Park.
Yeah, the Jurassic Park is going to go on forever. I thought we were done when they ended Jurassic World, but then they came out with another one after that. It was like, when are we going to stop? Just because we should, or just because we could, should we continue with Jurassic
Park? Isn't that the lesson Jurassic Park tries to teach you in general?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is.
Listen, Pat, getting all philosophical on us about the Jurassic Park meaning and adapting it back to its own creation.
Oh man, I love the Jurassic Park book. It's much better than the movies.
Never read it. I don't read.
Oh, you should. It is Audible then.
too many words, you know.
Even it talks a lot about the.
I've been reading about our subject tonight.
Well, it talks a lot about the chaos theory and stuff like that, which I find fascinating. So.
You know, the classic Bob After Dark pose is actually stolen from Ian, the character from.
Oh, yeah. Dark. Yeah, yeah. You can see that.
Before.
I never paid attention to that. So, yeah, definitely. Now I can see it.
Yep. I have all my best stuff is stolen. My best joke has been stolen from Joe Diamond, and my pose was stolen from Jeff Goldblum.
At least it wasn't from Neil Diamond. I mean, we have that going for us.
Does Neil Diamond have a classic pose that...
I don't know, but it's just a rhinestone thing.
Oh, gotcha. All right. Our last news story comes to us from Sky News once again. Dead Thai woman sent to crematorium wakes up in coffin.
Oh.
A woman brought in for crematorium at a Thai temple was found alive in her coffin. The 65-year-old had been taken to Wat Rot Prang Hong Pham, a Buddhist temple on the outskirts of Bangkok, after she appeared to have stopped breathing 2 days earlier. Her family had traveled hundreds of miles with her body in the coffin and were preparing for her to be cremated. However, moments before the service began, a Shak temple manager, PAIRATSOODTHOOP, said he heard a faint knocking coming from inside the coffin. I was a bit surprised, so I asked them to open the coffin, and everyone was startled, he said. Yeah, I guess so. I saw her opening her eyes slightly and knocking on the side of the coffin. She must have been knocking for quite some time. The cremation was due to be live-streamed by the temple. Theory, or THAIRATH, the nation's best-selling newspaper, named the woman in the question as Chon Thriat Sakalu, said she was brought in by her brother, Mong Kol, same last name. The brother said that she had been bedridden for about 2 years before her health deteriorated further and she became unresponsive, appearing to have stopped breathing, according to Mr. Sudthop. So the brother placed her in a coffin and drove her 300 miles from her home province to the north of the country in the capital, Bangkok. The Bangkok Post reported that the woman's brother had been told by local officials that his sister had died. The woman had wished to donate her organs to a hospital in the Thai capital, but her brother was turned away as he did not have the relevant paperwork. Instead, he went to the temple, which offers free cremation service. After the woman was discovered alive, she was assessed and sent to the Banghai Hospital, Thairath reported, where she was treated for hypoglycemia before being released back to her brother. Asked how he felt to learn that his sister was still alive, get this, he said he was indifferent, according to the newspaper. And then he said the temple would, yep, he was indifferent, and he said the temple would cover her medical expenses.
Interesting.
That is Pat's take.
Wow, that's a lot. First of all, that's one heck of a nap, you know? Imagine waking up after 2 days, but you're in a coffin though now? That's pretty scary. Maybe she's a vampire. I'm not going to rule that one out. But so...
Whoa, Pat is giving us a vampire theory.
Yeah.
Not ruling it out.
I don't believe in vampires, but that's, you know, what they used to do, right? Is that that's the reason why the vampire legend came about, is because people were waking up after being buried and stuff. And anyways, so, wow, that is really interesting. And just that the only thing she needed to be treated for was hypoglycemia, so low blood sugar, because she hadn't eaten in 2 days. That makes a lot of sense. But man, that's amazing. I'm glad that she's alive. Let's hear it for the Buddhist that let her free then, I guess. And
yeah, we learned all about Pat's Buddhism track in the past episode. This is a quick chance for me to self-plug myself on my own show.
There you go.
Go back and listen to the Pat and Rebecca interview from last month.
Yeah, you know, interesting. Here in America, Buddhists are treated very different. It's treated as a religion, but in like Japan and other places, Buddhism is mainly treated as people that take care of the dead. So like a lot of times in Japan, like a Zen Buddhist, so they wear black and they will have like brown on them sometimes. If they're seen on like the bus or something, people just assume that they're going to the house of somebody that just died to perform like a last rites kind of thing or something. So when you said that, I definitely see the connection that they have their own crematorium though. That's something. But that's how they make their money over there. So it's a shame that that's the only thing that they do and the only thing that they're known for.
Can you imagine the monk who opened up that, who heard that tapping and how lucky she had to have been for him to like have that hearing just to hear a slight tapping, you know?
Yeah, that's something.
That the luck she has.
Yeah.
I think it's a little strange that the brother is just indifferent about her not being dead. That's a bit odd.
Yeah, especially with Thanksgiving coming up.
Well,
you know, it's
don't
like
the best of relationships.
Probably not.
Anywho, let's, Pat, you ready to take a quick break?
Sure, whenever you are, man.
All right, Pat, we're going to take a quick break for our fans. Be right back. And to our podcast fans, you're about to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
And we're back. Oh, hey there, Pat.
Oh, hey, how was your break?
My break was good. What'd you do during break, Pat?
Oh, I dreamed about the moon.
What was your dream about?
About, you know, those people that went to the moon after 66 years after they developed the plane and how amazing that technology was that they were able to come up with it in 66 years.
You know, it's pretty amazing, Pat.
Yeah. How about you? What did you do on your break?
You know, since this week we were talking about lumberjacks, I actually went out to the woods to try to chop down my own Christmas tree.
Oh, yeah. How'd that go?
I don't have a real Christmas tree. Let's just say that. Oh, let's just say I'll be ending okay. up with the same old fake one I use every year.
It's probably better for the environment anyways. Something. We got to go green, you know? Yeah.
All right. So, Pat, I got to ask you. You're a fan of Bob After
Yes.
Dark.
I am. I'm a huge fan.
Okay. Do you remember way back several years ago, we did an episode on lumberjack lore or the fearsome critters? Are you familiar with that?
I don't remember this, but it sounds fascinating.
Okay. So many moons ago, lumbering was like the biggest thing we had in America. Can you imagine like early settlers, they're moving into the area. They have to clear trees down to get settlements up. That's just how it works. So lumbering was like one of the biggest industries we had here. And it was also one of the most dangerous and also probably, probably one of the main reasons why OSHA exists to this day. Not only were these guys, primarily these guys were out there chopping down trees with the very bare
in their flannels.
In their flannels. And but here's the thing. They're using like the bare minimum safety techniques, and most of them are drunk constantly.
Well, yeah. Well, you have to be, because you're just in a flannel and you're in the freezing cold sometimes. So
that's
yeah,
all you, and that's all you have. Yeah. So these lumberjacks would get together and they would tell stories to each other at the end of their shifts, because they would just stay out in the woods for weeks on end chopping down trees. So they would stay as one does, and that's what they had to do for money.
Yeah.
So here they are, they're chopping down trees. And they would tell stories back and forth. And occasionally they would tell what would be called tall tales, which is they would say, hey, did you catch that Paul Bunyan guy? He was in reality, Paul Bunyan was 6 feet, but because he was taller than everybody else, they made him out to be like 12 feet tall. They would tell stories of a guy named Pecos Bill who was able to lasso tornadoes and whatnot. But what I find the most interesting is the fearsome critters. Or their version of cryptids.
So what kind of cryptids do we have then?
So cryptids and cryptids are animals are concrete entities with supernatural, that could have supernatural abilities or not, that are studied in a pseudoscience called cryptozoology, which we take to and we try to learn about these things and try to prove that they're real. Either they're extinct animals that get rediscovered, or they're creatures with supernatural abilities that we're not able to classify in modern science, whatever it might be. Fearsome critters, there's nothing about them other than stories that these old lumberjacks would tell one another. And that's all there are. So most of these are probably fake, or they were killed off. But they're still interesting how they are. So I have here two articles here. One is from abookofcreatures.com and the other is from mythfolks.com, which is Fearsome Critters, the Scary, Whimsical, and Baffling, Bizarre Beast of Tall Tale Folklore. So Pat, I'm going to read you a little bit about some of these and I want your opinion on them as I finish it up, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
All right, so a lot of you people know the legend of Paul Bunyan and his giant blue ox babe. At least you've probably heard of him if you are from the U.S. But as well as the creatures are from these all-American folktales, there were also others that were logging camps at the Big Woods, a magical mirage of bizarre, fantastical beasts, birds, and fish, a genre of folklore known as fearsome critters. There's no direct connection, but if you enjoyed Roald Dahl's whimsical and creative naming in such of his books, you'll definitely enjoy the names of some of these fearsome critters. There are so many, and the ones here that this author talks about, I'm just going to go over because some of them are absolutely terrifying. The first one we're going to talk about is the Hide Behind. Perhaps the most famous of the fearsome critters, this animal was said to be so fast that it could always hide behind the nearest tree before you turned around. The legend of the Hide Behind was often a simple, sobering explanation of for any woodsman who ever returned to camp. Where's Dave? Hide behind. Oh. So what do you think? Wow.
Well, I wonder if Jack Chavez has some hide behind blood, because when I was in the room with him at your event, he disappeared all the time, and I never saw him leave the room. He just would be not there. So I'm wondering if Jack has some of that blood in him.
So a little bit more about them. The hidebehinds are very dangerous animals found throughout American logging country. It gets its name from always hiding behind something, and nobody has ever seen one, or to be specific, no greenhorn has ever seen one.
No greenhorn? What's a greenhorn?
Lumberjack, outside of lumberjack, normal folk. Experienced lumberjacks know that the hide behind looks a lot like a bear, walks upright standing 5 feet 10 inches to 6 feet tall.
Ooh.
Its slender body is covered in long black fur, thick enough that its front and back are interchangeable, and its face, if it has one, is unknown. The forelegs are short, powerful, and armed with bear-like claws. The tail is that of a French sheepdog and is curled upwards. A hide behind is so narrow that it can conceal itself behind a 10-inch tree. No matter how fast you move, the hide behind is always faster. You can whirl around to catch a glimpse of it, but it always... But is always out of sight from behind a tree. They are extremely patient stalkers, capable of fasting on for 7 years before finding suitable prey. So what do you think of the hide behind, Pat?
Well, since only the lumberjacks that are drunk saw them, I'm going to probably say that they didn't exist. Although, you know, I will say that the gorilla was once thought to be a cryptid. They were first described in like 1847-ish area. And they were not actually recorded being seen until 1902. So the gorilla was a cryptid, an animal that we know well now. So who knows? Maybe they're just hiding behind my monitor right now.
Ooh, that's a terrifying thought. And yeah. So you and I have had a conversation about your beliefs and plenty of times, and you would tell me that cryptids are something that you more or less could believe in if there was more scientific evidence behind them, correct?
I mean, yeah, like the idea of, it just got dark in here. Like the idea of like a Sasquatch or something like that sounds really appealing to me. Just the problem is that we have not actually ever, you know, had real documented evidence of that, in my opinion. So I don't know, but I could get behind that though.
Okay.
What about you? What is your thought about the hide behind?
I think a lot of these stories are meant to tell things to sober guys up real quick. I feel like some of these stories are told to scare gentlemen in the company to get their jobs done correct, or they, you know, sneak off and keep drinking and the hide behind will get you. You know,
yeah, there
saying?
You go.
And
yeah, you got
to
be alert.
I don't want to assume that lumberjacks are all heavy drinkers, but a lot of them were.
Yeah. So, what about currently? Because there are still lumberjacks.
I'm assuming these days they're under OSHA regulations and are well taken care of and make sure that it's a safer environment for them than it ever was. I'm assuming that if you're operating heavy machinery, you're probably not drinking with it these days.
Yeah. One of my favorite things about lumberjacks is when they would send the logs down the river and they would jump between logs. That's crazy. Yes, seems really dangerous.
I seen a lumberjack show in Wisconsin Dells once. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, I think I saw that too, but probably way before you did, because maybe a little bit older than you, Bob.
Just a couple years.
Yeah, just a few.
All right. So the next one I want to talk about is the Gumbaroo. This fearsome creature lived in the burned over forests, and its round leathery body was said to be impenetrable. Bolts would simply bounce off its skin. Its unkillable nature made its perfect legend to keep would-be hunters from venturing too far into dangerous territory. And the thing is said to be known as a long, skinny, terrifying looking creature, but it being bulletproof makes it even a little bit more terrifying, don't you think?
Yeah, I wonder how it's bulletproof though.
The skin is so thick on it.
So like an armadillo?
Very similar. The Gumbaroo is said to look like a fat black bear in a shape completely hairless, except, oh, sorry folks, my notes just got covered up here.
Sounds like me so far, though.
What you mean? Except for it's 5 minutes. Well, hear me out. So the Gumburu is said to look like the fat black bear in a shape completely hairless, except for its prominent eyebrows and bristly hairs on its chin. Instead, it has dark, smooth, and extremely tough, coal black leather-like skin that makes the beast invulnerable to bullets, rocks, and arrows.
Wow. Bullets, rocks, and arrows. Wow, that's interesting.
Its main weakness is fire, or is at least fire.
Fire bad.
But it has giant thick eyebrows. So hairless giant beast with thick eyebrows and razor sharp teeth.
Besides being black, I think I'm one of them. You know, I think I'm an albino version of one of them. I matched that description pretty well. So except for the skinny part, but yeah, and the black part. So, but I mean, I'm pretty close to that. I'm going to call BS on this one. I'm sorry. I don't believe in this because of the bulletproof skin. And you said it in the story that it was told to people so they wouldn't go far into the woods.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's the reason why. Maybe that's how they kept people from cutting down trees in areas that they shouldn't be cutting down.
All right. So the next one, but let me finish up my Gumburu so I didn't give you my take on it. I would say if disgruntled fat black bear with really tough skin, if they're only using like a black powder pistol, I would say it's very possible that the gun was not strong enough to pierce its body and it more or less angered the bear versus actually damaging it. I am going to consult a hunter on that. And I'm going to actually consult Dr. Ben Vanerson, and next week we'll get a better answer for you guys. How does that sound?
Yeah, it sounds good. Have you ever shot a black powder rifle?
I have not, but I know somebody who has.
Yeah, you know me. I've shot one.
Have you really?
Yeah. Yeah, in Boy Scouts.
Oh, wow. You're a scout?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course I was. Yeah, I'm always prepared. So one interesting thing about the one that I shot, it was like a shotgun that had like two different triggers on it. And the first trigger that you pull, it's pretty difficult to pull. And then the second one is like a hairpin trigger. And I, you know, he had told me this, but it didn't register in my brain what it was. So they set me up, they got the black powder in there, they can set how much recoil that it has then too. So how much kickback you're going to get. And when I shot it, I was so scared that I aimed it straight up in the air at the very last second. And yeah, the little ball just went straight up. And then I ran because I was afraid it was going to come hit me, but I never found it. So
I was going to say that sounds like a very dangerous idea.
Yeah, giving me this weird rifle. Yeah, it's pretty dangerous. I was probably 12 years old at that time, maybe 13. I don't know, something like that.
If there's any hunters in the chat that's not Dr. Ben Vanderson or firearms experts, can you guys give me your opinion? Think lumberjack frontiersman rifles. Do you think they would be strong enough to pierce like a really fat black bear's hide? And because it's not piercing it, maybe that's the story of the Gumburu and that's what they think it is.
Well, I would also say that a lot of times with the bears, like even though they get shot, they don't react to it. They just keep coming like nothing ever happened because first of all, they have a lot of adrenaline. Second of all, they have a lot of fat. So the fat blocks it from doing much. So
all right. So the next one we're going to talk about is the silver cat.
Silver cat. Wow.
The silver cat is a bizarre creature which was first reported by the frontiersmen of North America, which have since become known as a fearsome critter. It is said to be a large feline creature which weighs at about 300 pounds, sporting tousled ears and possessed of horizontal rather than vertical slits in its red eyes. The silver cat's most distinguishing feature is its tail, however. 11 feet long and as powerful as any boa constrictor, its ends are a bony club with growth that shows like spikes on one side, yet smooth and hard on the other. They are rumored to make their lairs in the highest burrows in the tallest of trees.
So like the redwoods or something.
Yes. So 300 pound wild cat with a spiked tail. What's your thoughts?
Sounds like Thundercats.
Oh.
Sounds like they're going for Mumra then. Yeah. My thoughts about this one. I would say that they might have been confused by like a cougar or something like that. And I don't mean a cougar in the way that we say it nowadays. I'm talking about like the cat version of the cougar. So, or a mountain lion, as some would say, something like that, or maybe a lynx or something, or I don't know, or like a really big like bobcat. But I'm thinking
the spiny tail.
I'm just thinking these people were drunk. I mean, once you said that, I mean, it's like they're just drunk. They see all kinds of things. And I'm imagining that they don't see them for long because they're cats. So that's probably pretty fast. So you could get some matrixing going on there too.
Jay Brijas says a revolver, maybe single shot pistol, depending on the caliber, may pierce a hide. So if it doesn't, though, I'm curious if it bounces off. That's where that story comes from.
Well, yeah, like if you get like a 22 gauge rifle or 22 caliber rifle, those are not powerful at all. They're just like a little bit more powerful than like a pellet gun or something like that. So maybe that's what they're using to shoot at them, and it's not effective then at all.
Okay.
Which would make sense because it's a very light gun to carry out in the woods too.
I love it. Oh, but thanks for the jumping in on that one. So
they need a cannon, like a bazooka or something like that. We're going to take these things down.
So there is I did an episode a while back called the Snallygaster. The Snallygaster is a fearsome critter, but like the reason why we do these in such short bits is because they're not long enough to do a full episode. The Snallygaster, on the other hand, had enough information about it to actually do an episode. And Pat, you would love this. There's an actual story about Teddy Roosevelt going to go hunt down the Snallygaster because he was famously going to skip out on a conference where he was going to talk with world leaders because he said this thing was terrorizing the people of Appalachia too long and he himself was going to kill it if he had to.
I mean, I'm sure that was code for him going out drinking, smoking kind of thing, but yeah. I have no idea, but Teddy Roosevelt, definitely a character. You know, I got to read more about Teddy Roosevelt because people that do quote him all the time and have like a lot of stories about Teddy Roosevelt.
If I would believe in the paranormal, it was him.
I'm sure. Yeah.
There's some cryptids.
There's some presidents that have happened in our lifetime that believe in like the paranormal and UFOs and stuff. Well, I'm not going to say their names because one of them might be in office currently though. Yeah.
But either way,
Snallygaster.
But anyway, Pat, I got a ridiculous one for you.
Oh, is it wearing clothes?
It is called the Rump Diffusal.
The Rump Diffusal.
Rump Diffusal. RUMPTIFUSEL. They are a common misconception that owl pellets are left behind by owls. This belief, spread by highfalutin scientists, is a load of hooey. Any lumberjack can tell you that these pellets are wad of clumps of clothing. The only remains unfortunate greenhorns who are approached by a refusal. These creatures are big, vicious animals covered in a fine pelt, not unlike mink. They are flat and flexible and not so fast, much like the anglerfish and the alligator snapping turtle. This creature lures its prey with its reach by appealing to greed. It catches its prey by draping its body over a stump or a log in plain sight, looking like the world abandoned an expensive fur coat. When a greedy tenderfoot approaches the for a better look, the creature, making with deceptive speed, engulfs the victim. The underside of the critter is lined with tiny sucking pores, and their prey thoroughly is drained of all of its bone marrow and blood.
Ooh.
It's essentially a sack of fur that crawls around.
Okay. Wait, you didn't say what you thought of the last one, though, too.
Oh, the silver cat. I believe they were real.
Yeah.
I think the spiny tails are not uncommon in the animal world. I would say that.
But in cats, though?
I would say that it might have been a mutation.
Okay.
It's very possible. I mean, the jackalope might be scientifically finally explained as the rabbits with the antler syndrome, where they're not antlers, but their bones are protruding.
Oh, yeah.
Their heads looking
Yeah.
So it could be something like that, where the bones were excreting out of its tail, or they were just drunk.
So was it like a saber-toothed tiger or something like that? Because 300 pounds is pretty big for like a cat in North America that isn't a cougar.
I would say so.
Yeah.
But I'm going with plausible on that one.
Okay. Now this one that you just said is not plausible at all.
Oh, you're going with the killer toupee you don't believe in.
Yeah. I don't believe in it. You know, you lost me with the sucky stuff on the bottom. It's like, there's no animal that looks like that. There's no animal that resembles that. There would not be an advantage to the animal for having this. So I can't see how evolution would allow something like this to be. And also, too, wouldn't we be like, why are all these bodies here that have all their blood sucked out of them and all their bone marrow? And that's interesting that it's bone marrow, too, because you have to crush the bones in order to get the bone marrow. So that's really interesting, though. Mm. Sounds like something you might find on Skinwalker Ranch or something.
Yes, or it could also just be a killer toupee.
Yeah, what are your thoughts about it, Bob?
I want it to be real. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, but then we'd have to fear these things, you know? Fear going out into the woods because of the Rumpelstiltskin thing, whatever it's called. Yeah, I'd rather not be worried about it. So I'm going to say definitely not real at all. I like the friendly cryptids.
Well, what's a friendly cryptid, Pat?
I don't know. I would think Sasquatch is a little bit more friendly sometimes. Although Jack told me that they have their own language and religion and stuff. And I that would be that they're a little bit more advanced than I would want my cryptids to be. So I don't know. But there's got to be some that are nice, right? What about the Yule Cat? He's nice.
He mauls you if you don't get new clothing for Christmas.
Yeah, but if you get new clothing, you're fine. Probably purrs.
Yeah, but you have to be lucky enough to get new clothing.
Yeah, are you going to do a Yuletide Cat episode this year?
I've done a Yule Cat episode in the past. I can't keep talking about it.
Sure you can. It would make Panic really, really happy to hear about it again. Yes. I think you should do it as a tradition. It should be an every year thing that you do.
Oh, my word. For a story that takes 5 minutes to tell.
Yeah. That would, hey, I would enjoy listening to that over and over again.
Yes. All right. So I have time for one more, Pat. And this one is the most ridiculous of all.
Oh, great.
The hoop snake.
The hoop snake. Okay.
The hoop snake is a legendary creature from the United States, Canada, and Australia. It appears in Pecos Pills stories, although its description of hoop snakes is one with which most people are most familiar. Stories of the creature predate the fictional tales considerably. Several sightings of the hoop snake have been alleged in Minnesota, the Wisconsin border, in the Sioux Croix Valley, Wick County and Wauwatosa County in North Carolina, Prince Edward Island, and Kamloops, British Columbia. According to folklore, its distinguishing feature of a hoop snake is that it can grasp its tail in its jaws and roll after its prey like a wheel. In one version of the myth, the snake straightens out at the last second, skewering its victims with its venomous tail. The only escape is to hide behind a tree, which receives a deadly blow instead of promptly dies from the poison. An Australian rendition of the myth describes a circular snake roughly the size of a steering wheel with a set of elongated spines evenly spaced near its inner lining of a circular body. It's hypothesized that the snake has the ability to rapidly constrict, quickly reducing its circumference of its body to entrap the limb of a kangaroo, wallaby, dingo, or human.
Wow. Is that all you got?
Well, I have, there's a sightings here.
Okay, let me hear some of the sightings.
This was a good one. So sightings are occasionally reported, though the existence of the hoop snake has never been accepted by the scientific community. Big surprise there, right?
Mm.
So there's a naturalist by the name of Raymond Dietmars placed a $10,000 in a trust in New York bank for the first person that would provide evidence of the hoop snake. Some have suggested its disorientated description of a sidewinder of the American Southwest or mud snakes, which is occasionally lie in a hoop like shape. The hoop snake possibly is an embellishment of actual instances of snakes swallowing its own tails, mistaking them for prey. So that's the story of the hoop snake.
Yeah.
I need to hear what you think, because it's, to me, it's ridiculous to think of this thing spinning at me like a tire and then stretching out like a skewer.
Yeah. But how does it eat then? If it devoured its own tail or something like that, like
puts the tail in its mouth.
Okay. To create this. Oh, so it's like a transformer.
Yes, so it spins, right?
Wow.
Like a somersault, and then it leaps out at the last second and pierces you.
And it can do the tail thing whenever it wants to.
Yes, and it can move really fast.
Wow. Wow, that is interesting. Man, I never saw that with that Australian guy that was always looking for the snakes that passed away. Forget his name. Steve Irwin. He never talked about that. He would go right up to it though if it was there. That is ridiculous, but it would make a really good belt probably, because it's already hoop shaped. So as long as it's the right size, you know. I don't know. I don't buy it. I don't buy that it's going to attack you like that. Most snakes, when they're attacked, is because they have to, because they feel threatened. It's like even a rattlesnake gives you plenty of. I mean I've known a couple of snakes in my day. So I would say that most snakes, like the rattlesnake, give you plenty of warning. Even the king cobra has to stand up in order to shoot its venom at you, which is mostly the female version of it, I think. But anyways, so no, I think that's pretty ridiculous that it's actually like a predator, that it's actually going after people, attacking it like that. Especially since, like, most snakes can't take down a human. They would have to have a really big mouth.
Yeah, but this thing just pierces through you with its tail. It moves quick, and then it just pierces you, and then it'll take its time eating you.
But that's not what snakes do, though.
Well, the hoop snake, that's how the hoop snake does it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't believe it, though, Bob. I'm sorry.
So a lot of...
Now, if you had him in a dress, then I would say maybe then it could be. Maybe a nice little pink dress or something.
My word. I thought you said you don't believe in cryptids in clothing.
I want the hoop snake to have a dress. I'm sorry.
Okay, so...
Because there's hoop skirts, right?
From North Dakota, South Dakota, that of the Tekuhi, he can't have his top hat, and the praying mantis man can't have his coveralls, but the hoop snake can have a dress.
Yeah. Because there's hoop dresses. Yeah, then I'd believe in it. then I'd give it my stamp of approval. I should actually make a stamp where I can, you know, stamp things on it. Stamp of approval. Pat's facts. Stamp of approval.
All right, Pat. So that's all the time we have this night for talking about our fearsome critters. Do you have anything you would like to share with the audience about what's going on with Ghostly?
Yeah, so Ghostly's about to take a little sabbatical. We always take December off so that people can catch up on our episodes. But you know, we like to say that we do that so that we can spend time with our families and stuff like that too. But our latest episode, or our last episode of the year, is coming out tomorrow. It's about Ringwood Mines. Have you ever heard of Ringwood Mines in New Jersey?
Can't say I have.
Very interesting place. So as far as the history goes, it was both a hero and a villain, because it was a hero because it pretty much won us the Revolutionary War. I know there's a Ken Burns documentary about the Revolution. I have not watched all the episodes yet, so I can't say if he mentions it, but because they iron, it's a big long story. Anyways, but the villain, because the Ford Motor Company, hopefully they're not sponsors of yours, Bob.
They are, no.
Okay, so they dumped a bunch of paint sludge that they used for painting cars inside the mines when they closed in the 1930s. In the 1960s, a bunch of Native American children found these bright neon-colored mounds, and they decided that they were toys for them, and goo that they would make into toys like sleds and stuff like that, and they would play on them. And suddenly they all got poisoned and got rare diseases and stuff. But ghost-wise, there's all kinds of stories about blue lights and about a blue lady in the manor. And oh my God, there's just, if tragedy really dictates where there's ghosts, then this has to be the most haunted spot in the world then.
No kidding.
Do you believe that tragedy is the key element to a ghost?
I don't think it has to be tragedy. I think it just needs to be a strong emotional attachment.
Yeah, well, this is definitely tragedy. This is a lot of children, a lot of families, a lot of people died, and a lot of corruption, and yeah.
Sure.
So we did mines for the last two episodes.
Did you cover the tunnel?
We have not. But we did talk about the knocking that happens before there's an event that's going to happen. So a lot of times miners would, hear knocking right before something bad was going to happen. So they would take off running.
Right.
Yeah. So but we did talk about that. We talked about a lot of things. It was a very, very deep episode. I don't think we've gone that deep in a long time where it was really, we really got to the nitty gritty on this one.
Well, folks, that's an episode that I'll be excited to check out. And you guys can see that wherever you listen to great podcasts, that is, isn't that correct, Pat?
Yeah, anywhere you listen to Bob After Dark, you can listen to Ghostly, except for WJOB.
No, you cannot listen. Which, this episode's a podcast exclusive, so it's not even on WJOB. Yeah. But Pat, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on this evening. I know I just made you do this. I made you do this recently, but I'm going to make you do it again. Do you have a quip for us for this evening?
Quip? No, but I do have something to share with you. I bought a new pair of pajamas and I was about to put them on when you called, and I'd like to share with you what they are.
Yes, I'd love
that. Because I think you might like them. So can you see that?
Oh my God, are those Mothman pajamas? Oh, they're Jaws.
No, they're Jaws. They're Jaws pajamas.
That's awesome.
What are your thoughts of the movie Jaws?
Oh, so good.
It definitely is. And it was just their anniversary. So that's why I got them. Yep. And yeah, I'm excited to put them on tonight and sleep the sleep of the dead. So
absolutely. All right, folks, thank you for Pat. Make sure you stick around after the closing. Folks, thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Pat, we just want to wish all of you sweet dreams. To my mom, I just want to say goodnight. To you, to my dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. And to Tiff, no, wherever you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Okay, everybody, remember the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
memoriam development.